you know, have you ever got a shot from somebody that you're dating?
They're looking right at you.
Yeah.
And they're giving you a shot and they're getting into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not a turn on.
No. Creepy.
That's not working.
No, not for the person who's receiving it, probably.
But it's like, who's that, you know, is that scary for me because I know the guy, or is that scary for him because he's like, I know that guy, and I don't want him going around saying, hey, this clown, remember that clown that I used to know?
Sure.
Gave me the worst COVID shot ever.
Here's for not giving me any extra stage time. Gives you two shots.
Yeah. It's like, you shouldn't know the people who are injecting you, I think, is the point that I'm making.
I agree. Yeah.
That's, you know, that's a little, you should be able to recuse in that situation. Be like, is somebody else go shoot that guy up?
I agree. I was walking here and somebody smelled like mold. Like, ooh. They went by and like, geez, it smells like, you know how, like, I went to Savers. I go there from time to time and I look for some treasures. And they had the Life magazines. Don't. And usually some of them are just in horrible shape. And they're just moldy and they smell and stuff.
Don't eat the food at Savers.
They're selling hot dogs at Savers?
Don't eat the food at Savers.
So I bought a couple. And all I could think is, geez, those smell like my Life magazines. And it was a person who was walking, like, you know, toward the studio tonight. Ooh. Was walking. Well, they were walking downwind, obviously. And I'm like, geez. And it was an older gentleman, and there was also an older woman. So it was one of them. I couldn't figure out which one it was, but I have my suspicions.
One of them just pulled a coat out of storage.
You're right. That's what it was.
That had been there for possibly years.
I couldn't, I had my suspicions, but they were both wearing kind of old clothing. I think you're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
Somebody just pulled a coat out of storage. It was like, you should have washed that before you put that
doesn't
on.
Doesn't smell like mothballs. It smells like mold.
Yeah.
Smells like broken
smells
dreams.
Like mold and mildew.
It's broken like, dreams.
First tailgate of the year on Sunday.
Yeah.
And we're playing cornhole, and the bean bags are like, every time they hit anything, there's a cloud of spores flying in the air.
Oh, there you go.
I'm like, can we please not touch these anymore?
So those have been sitting outside since the beginning of the summer?
They've been sitting in a cool, damp place.
Yeah, with a little yellow on it, a little yellow spores.
Sitting in a cool, damp place long enough to attract a coating of penicillin.
Best movie about spores. Invasion of the Body Snatchers, I think. What are the spores?
I'm thinking The Last of Us.
Isn't there one called Virus or something? What is it? Last of Us?
The Last of Us, the video game.
Yeah, that is a good video game. We're going to do horror video games one week.
Because that's, you know, those are spores that are controlling people's minds.
Yeah. Give me another spore.
I don't really know a lot of spore-related movies.
How come we're not seeing more spore-related movies now that this coronavirus has been out for a few years?
Well, I mean,
because everybody's sick of talking about it and dealing with it, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the thing that's surprising to me in some ways is that the zombie stories are still going on television, you know, and that they're still making zombie movies. They just launched Resident Evil on Netflix. I watched 10 minutes of it and couldn't take it anymore.
Really? Okay.
Oh, it was bad.
Yeah. There is a movie called The Spore, and The Spores, Agent of Harm, or Agent for Harm. I don't know where this one, 1966. And also a Godzilla movie is coming up. It says The X from Outer Space is about spores.
Because
1967 Japanese science fiction film.
Psychologically, the zombie movie plays very, very well in times of great political divisiveness.
Yeah.
Because as an audience member believing yourself to be virtuous, you put yourself in the position of the survivor who is dealing with these unending hordes of the living dead who are, in fact, your political or ideological opponents.
Yeah.
You know, so if you're a Democrat, all the Republicans are a bunch of Trump-following zombies. If you're a Republican, all the Democrats are a bunch of Ocasio-Cortez-following zombies. You know, and it's, you are going to persevere over the zombies, or the zombies are going to overrun everything and you're going to die, which is why that genre works.
Yeah.
You know, George Romero used to say that the zombies are effective because they're working class monsters.
Sure.
They're people that we recognize doing things that we recognize, as opposed to some supernatural beast. I think Romero was on to something with that. And I think that's, you know, sort of the truth of why those movies work is the more we're at each other's throats and the more amped up we are around each other, the more we want a zombie movie as a kind of catharsis.
I have to say, one of the scariest things that I dressed up as on Halloween, you might remember this. Do you remember when I dressed up as a zombie mechanic?
Yes.
And all it was this blue jumpsuit, with the zombie face and hat.
Yeah.
And like a, I found the biggest wrench I could find, and boy was
that
creepy.
Do.
And I just hid in bushes and stalked around and walked around the house. That was pretty spooky.
That's all you got to do.
Yeah, that was a spooky one.
You know, but that's COVID.
Because it's familiar, like you said.
COVID kind of turned into that.
Yeah.
You know, where you had everybody. Like, on one side, oh, you have to wear a mask, and, you know, if you're not wearing a mask, you're the enemy, and you're going to kill us all. And then the other people who are sitting there saying, you mask-wearing people are a bunch of idiot sheep giving up your rights. It's the zombie story. And
right.
I kind of expected that people would lose interest in the zombie story because we were living the real zombie story, but it turns out they still want the zombie story. Walking Dead is still going strong.
Right.
And some of those
last
other...
Last season, I heard.
Yeah. But last season, because they ran out of ideas 4 seasons ago.
Yeah.
They've been past the comic books for some time now. And it's how long are you going to keep making stuff up? That, and it's diminishing returns for them every year at this point.
Mm.
Because the show's well past its prime.
Yeah.
Everyone the audience liked is gone.
It's true.
And they're talking about bringing people back now, you know, to pump up the last season.
Who was your favorite on Walking Dead? Anybody? Rick?
That's why
it's going downhill.
Yeah, you got to like Rick. You got to like Rick.
Daryl's great, though.
Daryl's great. Daryl's brother, Michael Rooker.
Yeah, oh, he was great.
He was awesome.
He was Merle, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they got rid of him way too early. Yeah, I thought he was a fantastic ad. But, yeah, I loved Walking Dead, and then I didn't, and then I did again. It just got so gratuitous, like over the top.
That's the thing.
I mean, as a horror fan, are there films that you see, or even television shows, that are so gratuitous you're like, I can't watch this. It's like, this is just too much.
We've
had our late night Saturday night movie fests with the worst movie I can think of is showing late. And even we get through those.
I'm
know?
Telling people to go watch Lucio Fulci movies this month.
Sure.
On Facebook. So,
yeah.
Gratuitous and I tend to be very good friends. It depends on what you're doing with it.
What do you think it does? Does it strengthen us as humans getting through a horror movie? Are we confronting our fears? What is it that horror fans, why do they keep coming back to it? Because I consider both of us pretty big horror fans, but you wouldn't really notice that in everyday life.
Well, this is an interesting thing, and let me jump into this because Amityville Horror comes out this week on 4K.
Yes,
and the Amityville Horror is a terrible movie.
Think so?
It's an awful, awful, horrible.
Awful. It's got a good amount of cheese in it.
It's nothing but
cheese. It's a pretty good haunted house movie.
It's not.
You don't think so?
No.
Okay.
It's a terrible movie from beginning to end that a lot of people...
All right, you got to sell me on this because I have pretty good memories of the Amityville Horror.
So here's the thing. I have memories of the Amityville Horror as well. Everyone has operated... When you think about the Amityville Horror, the first one, and not any of the stupid sequels or remakes or any of that came along.
I got to start with the book because my mom had the book.
Right.
Yeah, before the movie.
When you think about the first one...
Yep.
You probably think it's a big-budget studio film, right?
Sure,
because you look at the cast, and it's like Margot Kidder, Josh Brolin, and Rod Steiger.
Right.
Okay? So you've got one of the stars of Superman, an Academy Award nominee.
Right.
And Brolin was just somewhat hot at that point in time. Like, people knew who he was.
Yeah, it was James Brolin. It was his dad.
Or James Brolin, rather.
Yeah.
It is not, and you look at the subject matter, and you're like, oh, that's a big studio film. It's not. It's a Samuel Z. Arkoff film.
Yeah, and it says it right in the beginning, doesn't it? It says Samuel Z. Zarkov presents, just like they do with Halloween.
American International Pictures.
Yeah.
This is the same guy that produced Cue the Winged Serpent.
It came out in 79, though, a year after Halloween, so I can forgive that.
So here's the thing.
Yeah.
It was the second biggest movie of 1979.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that was bigger in 1979 was Superman the movie. Which was the biggest thing since Star Wars.
Which came out in 78.
Came out
78. But in 79, that was the biggest hit for the year? Okay.
Because it opened December 15th of 1978.
Sure, sure.
Well into 1979.
Yep. Plus, Margot Kidder was in it. So that had to help with receipts for Amityville Horror.
Let me give you some films that made less money in 1979 than the Amityville Horror.
Alrighty.
Okay. I'll present this to you as a quiz. Do you think it made more or less money than this film?
Well, you already said number two. That was number two.
That's
anyway.
True. All right. Yeah. So I shouldn't have done that. Yeah. So here are some of the films that made more money than Alien.
What'd that make?
That made $60 million.
So that was number three?
That was number nine.
Yeah.
Amityville, by the way, made $86 million.
Right, right. On a $4.7 million budget. So great return for a horror movie.
It's the film that paid for everything that Arkoff did afterward.
Yep.
Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
Which, although it's a widely respected film and did well at the box office, wasn't massive, huge box office.
Yeah, Vietnam movie. A lot of people were getting sick of it by the end of the 70s. Platoon.
Rocky 2.
Yeah, wow.
Made more money than Rocky 2.
Yeah.
Made $1.3 million more than Rocky 2.
Yeah.
Now this is where we get really interesting. Moonraker,
great movie.
Amityville Horror made more money than a James Bond movie.
That's interesting, yeah. All right.
And this is the killer.
That goes to show you, though, how Halloween really changed the genre of horror forever, at least for those first few years, too.
This is the killer in all of these. If I told you that the Amityville Horror made more money than this movie, without previously saying it was number two for the year, you'd be like, you're crazy. Mm-hmm. Star Trek the Motion Picture.
Wow, really?
It made $4.2 million more than Star Trek the Motion Picture.
Wow. And Star Trek the Motion Picture, I remember being a kid. I mean, posters were out for that left and right. And I just remember, you know, I was like 8 or 9, and I'm like, eh, Star Trek's kind of silly. You know, I'd seen it on Channel 56 or whatever. I'm like, eh. But yeah, that's very surprising to me. Wow.
Star Trek was fourth overall for 1979. Rocky 2 was number 3.
Yeah.
And Apocalypse Now was 5. It made more money than the Muppet movie, but I'm not going to surprise you by saying that a horror movie made more money than a family movie.
And it was a rated R movie, too. That's surprising, actually.
Moonraker.
Muppet movie was huge.
Yeah. Moonraker is the one that really shocks me in this.
Yeah.
As much as Moonraker is a weak James Bond movie, James Bond movies make a lot of money.
I have to say, though, the Muppet movie, the Muppets were on TV for free. And everything at that point with Disney was kind of like, eh. They had like a lot of live action stuff. I remember Shaggy D.A., North Avenue Irregulars, Love Bug was re-released. Like all these re-releases in the movies. And so people weren't really taking their kids out to brand new, fresh, you know, G-rated movies.
Right.
It just didn't happen like it does now. Like any kid's movie that comes out now usually does pretty well.
Yeah.
I'd say this is like pretty much the high point for kids movies is probably 2022. It's probably one of the only things keeping the movie industry alive right now.
It pretty much is, based on the box office for everything else.
Yeah.
So the Amityville Horror,
let me just do this. Get out.
Yeah.
Get out.
Was a cultural, freaked me out. And it's like 1979, you remember the book was everywhere, the
get
movie was
out.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
It was a cultural phenomenal.
Yeah.
And you ask the question, does seeing these movies, you know, make us stronger or whatever?
Yeah.
There is a thing that happens every now and again with a horror movie where people who you know and whose opinions you trust tell you that they saw the movie
word
and it
of
was
mouth.
The
yeah.
scariest thing. It's not just word of mouth.
Yeah.
It's people that you know and trust.
Yes.
Telling you that it's the scariest thing that they've ever seen.
Yeah,
and they're not people that you would normally expect to go see a horror movie.
Mm.
And you're like, wait a minute, Joe Smith just walked in here and told me that he saw the Amityville Horror, which I find shocking.
Yeah.
And it was the scariest movie he's ever seen. Well, he doesn't go see horror movies anyway.
This is a suburban nightmare, though. I mean, the Amityville Horror is a suburban nightmare. It's one of those things,
you know.
And one of the best movies and the most universal movies come down to a simple question. Like Back to the Future is, what if you met your parents when they were teenagers, right?
Right.
The Amityville Horror is, what if you bought a haunted house and you had all your money into the house? What do you do?
If it was that, you know? If it was that, I could accept it.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with the Amityville Horror is it's not that. It's a story concocted by a couple that bought a murder house,
yes,
thinking they were getting the deal of a lifetime, realized that the house needed more work than they could afford, and tried to figure out a way to profit off of it.
Uh-huh.
They were either trying to break the deal, or they were trying to find some other way to monetize it.
Okay.
Every single neighbor that lived around them says the whole thing is BS.
Sure.
It's something that they dreamed up with Jay Anson, who wrote the novel, and their lawyers.
So this guy, though, it says Ronald DeFeo Jr., he murders an entire family with a rifle at their home, 112 Ocean Avenue, Amityville, New York.
So this is the story. In 1974, Ronald DeFeo, who by all accounts was a troubled young man, who clearly had some mental health issues that were exacerbated by drug use, walked into the house one night and shot his entire family to death.
Yeah.
Shot his parents, shot his brother and his sisters. A couple of years later, the Lutz family shows up and says, look at this deep discount murder house.
Sure.
It's right on the water in Long Island.
Nice.
Comes with a boathouse. It's everything you could possibly want.
Come with a rifle?
Didn't come with a rifle.
Yeah.
And they're like, let's buy it.
Sure.
Because...
it's a steal. It's a bargain.
If you could get your dream house...
if you don't believe in ghosts, yeah,
dream house. If you could get your dream house on the cheap... because there'd been some murders in there recently?
Yeah.
Are you doing that?
Eh, that's another great question. Probably not.
Really?
You know, this is a creepy thing, but my neighbor came over to me, like, after a year of moving into this house, and it was this little old lady, and she was nice enough and, you know, kind enough, and, you know, she's like, oh, are you in the house where the boy died? And I'm like, what? And I'm like, and then I was, you know, it creates doubt. I'm like, wait a second, am I in the house where the boy died? And I'm like, it turned out there was somebody nearby who unfortunately passed away in a house nearby. It wasn't ours, but it was nearby.
Yeah.
And it's a very sad story.
Yeah.
But the fact that she said that, and of course every little, you know, bell and whistle and doors open and close, and of course I'm seeing more than I should be seeing
right.
over the next few weeks because she's created that doubt in my mind.
Right.
You know, and that's where some real fear and real horror comes from.
See, I've never had
doubt.
I've never had the ghosts thing. Like, ghosts have never been a thing with me.
Yeah.
So it's like, if somebody tells me, if I'm looking at a house and somebody tells me that, like, people were murdered there and it's 50% off, my first questions are...
they don't have to disclose that.
My first questions are, does the basement flood and does the roof leak?
Yeah.
Not, you know...
does it come with a garage?
Yeah. Did they... But my third question is, did they clean up the blood?
Is there a boathouse?
Yeah.
Did you clean up the pool of blood?
Yeah, is there a boathouse?
The mattress still isn't here, right?
You know, if there's a boathouse, I might overlook the blood.
Right.
I might clean up the blood if there's a boathouse.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, that's not high on my list of concerns with the house.
Yeah.
Because I don't have plans to murder anybody. And it's like, unless there's obvious evidence that the murder happened, like, I used to live in a building on Washington Street in Boston in the South End.
Yeah,
and there was an apartment a couple of doors down from ours where somebody had overdosed.
Really?
And they didn't find the body for, I think, 3 or 4 days. And so in the middle of the living room, there was an outline.
Ooh.
From where the body had been
laid. It's juicy, yeah. The body starts decomposing and it gets juicy.
So there was an outline of the body. And there was a nice young couple around our age living there.
Ooh.
And everybody would come down and knock on their door and say, we want to see the body stain.
Oh, my
and
God.
Be, come on in. Here
Bunch
it is.
Bunch of freaks.
You know? Yeah. But if you live in a building where that's a thing.
Sure.
Like, of course, everybody's...
plus you're in your 20s. Everybody's doing drugs
and
drinking.
Yeah, everybody's going to go and be like, oh, let's see the body.
Let's see the body. Yeah.
It didn't really freak anybody out. It's like, oh, somebody overdosed.
Ugh.
You know?
Yeah.
If it had been a murder, maybe that's a little different. But it's, you know.
Awful. Imagine if that's your legacy. It's like, that's the most important thing you did is you left a body circle that everybody looked at.
Yeah,
that's your claim to fame.
That's
I've met some people like that pretty much. But yeah, it is a sad thing. Yeah, it's like you're a waste of society.
But
just become a body circle that we can all point to and laugh.
The thing about this movie is it's so obviously all of it is made up.
Yeah,
you know and it's cliche. Like, oh, you know, the priest comes to bless the house and the flies appear. And
creepy as hell.
The devil tells him to get out.
And the priest is somebody, too. Who is it?
Rod Steiger.
It's Rod Steiger,
in the Heat of the Night.
Yeah, who adds that gravitas that we were talking about, you know?
This film was a cultural phenomenon. Everybody went to see the Amityville Horror, and everybody talked about how scared they were by it.
Do you think Margot Kidder made any kind of difference in the fact that people wanted to see Lois Lane in a horror movie?
The fact that she is in it, and they got her for cheap because they made this before
Superman,
before Superman, her presence is one of the reasons why people thought this was a big budget film.
Yeah.
And Arkoff definitely leaned into that.
Sure.
You know, the marketing is all like Margot Kidder, James Brolin.
Right, and Rod Steiger.
Yeah. Rod Steiger is like a washed up has-been by 79.
Right. Yes.
Margot Kidder, this is like her fourth film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, still looking good. She was in Black Christmas, probably your best
horror
movie.
All the marketing for it looks like big studio film when it's little independent picture.
Mm.
Everybody had to run out and see it because everybody thinks it's a big studio film. It's not. It's a little independent picture.
Let's talk about those pig eyes, though.
Well, here's the thing.
Those pig eyes were scary as hell for a kid. I was eight.
Because the film is low budget, poorly made.
Yeah.
And because the film is terribly structured.
Mm.
Like, there's no... Usually, if you're making a movie like this, you're going to start out with, like, little things that are happening that escalate into bigger things and bigger things and bigger things.
Yeah.
This doesn't do that. This just has a bunch of self-contained scenes, like the babysitter in the closet and the pig eyes.
And the blood coming down.
The blood coming down
from the walls.
The window coming down on the kid's hand.
Oh, yeah.
All those things.
Horrible.
They're all little self-contained scenes.
Still horrible scenes.
That end with everybody screaming.
Yeah.
And because there's no build, there's no sense of direction to any of it, it works.
Yeah.
It works because it's a badly made movie. And with bad acting and bad storytelling.
Do you think it's like kind of like a serial where it's like they piece together, okay, we're going to have a scene with pig eyes. We're going to have a scene with the window closing. We're going to have a scene where the whole house starts coming down on them, and that's going to be the finale.
It's almost
like a Raiders of the Lost Ark, a Star Wars serial where they're just picking scenes and piecing together a movie.
Nobody's ever definitively disproven the story.
Yeah.
But there is one account of the story that says... They basically sat down, Anson and the Lutzes, with a couple of bottles of wine one night and speculated, oh, what if this happened? What if this happened? What if this happened?
Huh.
And that's where the story came from. That it wasn't, in fact, the neighbors are all like, none of this is real. None of that went on over there. Other than the murder, which everybody knows about.
Listen to this soundtrack in the background. Lalo. Schifrin?
Yeah.
Amityville Horror soundtrack. It's got kind of a disco scare to it. This is called Amityville Frenzy. So I'm going to play this in the little background while
nominated
we're talking
for an Academy Award.
The soundtrack was?
Best Original Score.
Wow.
Nominated for Golden Globes. Golden Globes didn't count for much back then.
No. They still don't unless Ricky Gervais is handing one to you.
But basically, this is a movie where everybody screams at each other.
Yeah.
James Brolin...
It's kind of like real life.
James Brolin demonstrates to everybody why women with kids shouldn't get remarried.
He looks so strung out in this, too. I think there's also something to be said there about James Brolin getting remarried. It's definitely a horror story for middle-aged men who have just remarried someone with kids.
Well, this is another aspect about this, is because when this film comes out in 1979, all the hippies...
Yeah.
Who haven't gone to Vermont or Oregon to try and keep the dream going.
Are buying houses.
Are first-time home
and
buyers.
And having kids. Yeah.
With kids.
Yeah.
And there's that aspect to it.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, Nicole Kidman is dressed like a 12-year-old girl for a lot of this film.
Is she in it?
Margot Kidder.
Oh, Margot Kidder. Okay.
She's dressed like a 12-year-old girl in most of this film.
Yeah.
Like, she's dressed up like a Catholic schoolgirl in a number of scenes.
Mm.
There's a scene where she's coming
on... Well, she's supposed to be Catholic, right? Isn't she a Catholic
woman?
No, but
she's not supposed to be 12.
Yeah, okay. I don't know. Catholicism messes people up a lot.
When you start paying attention... No, but when you start paying attention to her costume, to what she's wearing, it's like she's supposed to be, like, you know, an adult woman... Why does she look like she's 12?
Yeah, but that's the haunt. That's the B-movie horror. You got to have a scantily clad woman in there. And
Brolin looks totally strung out. He's ready to hit her kids like 20 minutes into the film.
Right, that's the whole thing, too, is that scare of, oh my. There's that other scare of being a middle-aged woman with kids who's married to a monster, which is what he slowly becomes. And he does a good job in this.
He does.
He goes a little crazy.
He does.
And it's kind of funny. Because like you said, he's hamming it up a little bit, too.
The whole thing is he's supposed to be like the second coming of the DeFeo kid that killed his family.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
The cop points that out. You look exactly like the kid.
Yeah.
You know? For me, the most interesting thing about this film, the thing that I do like about... I mean, it's laughable. So it's entertaining. I'll give it credit for that. is the director of this, Stuart Rosenberg,
mm-hmm.
is very quietly injecting like editorial commentary throughout the film.
Yeah.
There's a scene just before Margot Kidder's brother gets married in the film where he's counting out money to pay the caterer.
Okay.
And it opens on a shot of flames.
Flames.
And then you see the money being counted in front of the flames.
Huh.
And then a couple of minutes later, the money has disappeared because of whatever's in the house. There, and that's the most obvious example of it. But throughout the film, there are all of these little references to money and the cost of things. And we don't have enough money. And who's going to pay for this? And where's the money coming from? And I need the money. And it's very clearly Stuart Rosenberg saying, this story is a crock of nonsense.
Yeah.
These people are just trying to, you know, get some cash because they wound up in a bad place with this house.
Yeah.
And now I have to play along and direct a movie about it.
All right. See, I see it a little different than that.
You like it. You.
I do. I like it. I think it's a classic horror movie.
It's not scary.
It is scary. To 8-year-old me, and I was going to try to watch this last night, but I ended up getting caught up with some other things last night, like number one, finding little piece for my iPod here that I needed. But long story short, it brings back pretty good memories. And I did rewatch this a number of years ago, probably about 5 years ago, so it's still kind of in my mind. And I saw the remake, which was okay. The really bad one to me is Amityville 2,
The Heretic. Yeah.
But Amityville 2 is just awful.
That's
it's
also
just like
awful.
It's like a teenage boy and he's like raping his sister and like there's all kinds of crazy stuff happening in that one.
All the DeFeo stuff.
I mean,
that was really disturbing
to me. And I'm like, I said, I like horror movies, but that stuff gets a little too down home. Like when you're relishing in this, I think it just gets a little creepy for me, you know? And I think that's what happens more in Amityville too. But yeah, looking out that window and seeing those red eyes, and now they are like two red circles, you know? Like spoiler alert again, if you haven't seen it, I would recommend seeing this. Derek's saying don't see it. Tell me why it's being released in 5K or 4K or Blu-ray. Whatever's happening this week with it.
It's a film that I put it in the same category as The Blair Witch Project.
Say another one I like.
Not a scary movie. Terrible, terrible, terrible.
Pieces of it are.
All of it is.
Yeah.
It's a regional horror film that never should have been anything bigger than a regional horror film. But again, everybody went out and saw it and said, it's the scariest thing I've ever seen.
This was a very big book, though. Amityville Horror was a very big book.
The book is scarier than the movie.
Yeah.
If here's what I'll say. If you're a normie, you know, if you're not really big into horror, if you haven't seen everything, it's scary. If you've seen everything, you know, you know your way around horror a little bit, it doesn't pay off in any meaningful way. There's no real suspense structure to it. It's just a bunch of weird stuff that's thrown at you.
Yeah.
It's a little bit like that dark ride at the carnival, you know, where you're sitting in a little cart, you're going through the black room, and the strobe light comes on.
Happening, yeah.
And the skeleton jumps out at
you. Yeah, you know something's going to happen. It's just that period of waiting before it
does.
And
then the little thread
it's stretching it out
brushes past your ear, and you're like, ah!
Some of the best horror, like in that Halloween, the movies that made us there, they talk about that stretch of horror. And at the end, when they have that ending, and they just took all this film footage that was like already cut up on the floor, they're like, we need a better ending than this. And they stretch it out with showing all these empty rooms, like, where could Michael Myers be versus just Donald Pleasance looking out and, you know, there's nobody there. You know, they end it with this montage of like all these rooms and the streets and they're all cold and empty and it just leaves you with this dread of there's more to come because we didn't get him. You know, that's a great horror ending. But yeah, I mean, you know, this is pretty good. This is interesting, actually. It says James Brolin didn't want to do it, so he got a copy of the novel, and he was reading the book till 2 in the morning. He hung up a pair of jeans in his room. During an especially tense passage of the book, the pants fell to the floor. James Brolin jumped up from his chair in fright, and then he decided to do the film, convinced that the material would be effective.
Which it was.
Yeah.
You know, but this is one of those horror movies that it's sort of like, there's a reputation around it, and there's a collective psychosis around it that, for a lot of people, makes it more effective than it has any right to be.
I think the remake did relatively good. By the way, Amityville 2 was called The Possession from 1982, and that is just awful, I think. They have made it Amityville 3D and a 4, but the Amityville Horror was remade, in 2005. Wasn't bad. I don't know if I would recommend that one. I'd recommend the first one, but
the first one's better. You're going to see any of these things, see the first one, because it will at least explain to you why all the rest of them exist.
Yeah. But, I mean, the walls bleeding, that's pretty creepy, too. That's a good horror movie.
And they did that before The Shining did it.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's...
I'm giving it a pass, because it was a year after Halloween, and they were trying to push out horror movies quick. They're like, let's get Lois Lane and Josh Brolin.
The problem is the public perceived this movie in the same, you know, as being of the same caliber as The Exorcist.
Yeah.
And it's not. The Exorcist is a much better movie in every regard.
Sure.
But the Amityville Horror was like, oh my God, that's so scary. It's okay.
To me, it's still one I would own in my horror collection. I got it.
I would.
I got the remake and I got this one.
I would recommend it if you're not super critical of the film itself, which I am. Anyway, Vinegar Syndrome is dropping it on 4K. It's out right now.
Okay.
And this is one heck of a 4K package. They've put in every extra that's ever been on an edition of this before. Mm-hmm. So you're going to get everything that's ever been released. You're going to get a new 4K transfer.
Nice.
From the 35mm camera negative, Vinegar Syndrome's transfers are awesome. You never have to worry about that. Highly recommend it. For the very first time ever, the original theatrical surround mix is included.
Nice.
So if you got a surround sound system, you get the original theatrical surround mix.
Get out.
I consider that very important for horror movies.
Yeah. Imagine hearing that when you're super high.
Exactly.
Get out.
Because that's part of what makes these movies work. And if you can get that mix, then you definitely want that.
You'll be freaking out.
And they've thrown in a couple of new extras as well. They've got a new making of that they put together, basically with the people who are surviving.
Yeah.
Which is the screenwriter and the actors who played the kids, and the actor that played the young priest.
Yeah.
Everybody else who was involved in this is gone, unfortunately, because the movie came out 43 years ago.
James Brolin. Who's your favorite Brolin? James or Josh?
I like Josh better than James.
Yeah, I'd say Josh, too. James did some good stuff, though.
James' TV work is actually better than his film work, and that's an odd thing to say, and there aren't many actors that you'd say that about.
Yeah, true. He was in Westworld, though, and he was in Toy Story spinoff Lightyear.
Yep.
As Emperor Zurg, James Brolin. He still gets work.
So I'm definitely, you know...
They don't want to see him on screen, though. They just get his voice.
If you're a fan, definitely go get the 4K.
Yeah.
You'll want it. It's a solid package.
How much is it? 20 bucks? 30 bucks?
37 bucks. And maybe you'll get it down to like 27 around Black Friday if you don't mind waiting 3 years for it to ship.
Yeah.
That's my only fault with Vinegar Syndrome is when they do these big sales. They just did one. Their shipping takes forever. There's like two guys that run this company. And they have volunteers come in and package everything up for them. So you wait for... I ordered stuff from them last November that didn't show up until May.
Sure. You have to say something about this soundtrack, though. It is great.
It is a good soundtrack.
It is a good horror soundtrack.
I mean, the thing about it is, if you break down like the individual bits of the film, like if you take a sequence of the film in isolation, you can look at it and say, that's a competently done horror sequence.
Yeah.
It's when you put it all together.
So
that
if you
sit
go
there
in,
and you're like, what is this?
Go In is not... critical when it comes to horror. As an audience member in 1979, would you consider this a scary horror movie? Would this be entertaining to you?
Yeah, in 1979, everybody was over the moon about this movie.
Sure.
You know, it was one of the scariest movies ever made. And then it ran endlessly on cable, and it ran endlessly on broadcast.
I'd give it a B-. I'd give it a 3 out of 4 stars for a horror movie.
This
would you do it a 2? Would you do a 2.5?
I'd give it a 1.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
It's a hot mess.
Yeah. All right.
This worked exceptionally well on cable television. Because it's what... And The Exorcist worked exceptionally well on cable television, both for the same reason. They are films made up of a sequence of very short, scary sequences.
Yeah.
So instead of one big, long horror set piece that lasts for, you know, 90 minutes...
Sure.
You got all these little, like, 1 minute, 3 minute, 1 minute, 2 minute... All these little sets. These little set pieces. All these little sequences. And within each one of them... They follow the rules. They build dramatic tension. They scare you. And then everybody starts yelling and freaking out.
This has got quite a bit of different critical responses to it, though.
So
hit and miss.
If you're flipping around on cable and you stumble into it, you'll watch it for 5 minutes and you'll be scared.
Yeah.
And then you'll flip over to something else and be like, oh my God, Amityville, that's scary. Same thing with The Exorcist. You flip onto it, it's like, oh, they're walking down the hallway to the doorway.
Exorcist is a generally scary movie. Much, much scarier than this.
And every single one of those sequences in The Exorcist, by the way, opens with the long shot of the hallway with the door at the
end. Sure, yeah.
And every time they open the door, something worse happens than the last time they opened the door. So it gets to a point in that movie where all you have to do is see the shot of the door and you're scared.
Yeah. I will give you this. Rod Steiger is the worst part of the movie. He's so overacting in it, and he's so beyond his years in acting. He's just so bad.
You're
going
to give that to him and not Brolin?
No, Brolin's great. He slowly goes crazy, and he's good. And Margot Kidder does a pretty good job. Roger Ebert called it dreary and terminally depressing. But there's other people that also said, you know, it's an effective horror movie that succeeds because the performers take the over-the-top material seriously. So I don't know. It's got a 30% on Rotten Tomatoes. I didn't look on IMDb, but it is a I don't know. I guess it's a movie. I never really realized that people were torn with Amityville Horror. I would always assume that horror fans would like this one, but I'm actually surprised that you dislike it
if
so much.
If you know your way around horror and you look at it, you're like, what is going on? This is a mess.
But I still find things that are redeeming in it. I mean, the pig eyes, the fly scene. Plus, I also have to mention this. This house in Amityville Horror, everybody had a house somewhere nearby that looked like this with those windows.
Yep.
Because the windows make it look like a face, like a jack-o'-lantern, and the thing is alive.
They deliberately positioned some trellises on the house to make it look more like a face.
Yeah.
And they do the thing where the lights upstairs turn on.
Yeah.
You know, and they're red, like every time something bad is going to happen.
Well, think of this, too. Like, let's put another bad Stephen King movie in here. So Christine with the car is alive, you know? And it's like, it's a thing, you know? The house is alive, the car is alive. Christine is not an effective horror movie to me.
No.
A dumb horror movie.
John Carpenter directed that, too.
I know, and it's so dumb.
There are reasons why Stephen King doesn't adapt well to film.
Yeah.
Christine is a great example of that because everything that's happening in Christine plays brilliantly in the book.
Yep.
Where you feel the changes that are happening in the kid that owns Christine and where he's having the constant dialogue with the car.
Yeah.
You can't do that in the movie. In the movie, you got to boil it down to a handful of kill scenes and the kid loses his acne.
Sure.
Because it's a visual medium, and we can't have all this internal dialogue. It's why so many Stephen King movies are bad horror adaptations, or are bad adaptations. Mm-hmm. The way that he writes doesn't work for the screen.
Yeah.
When he writes stuff meant for the screen, it tends to be very good.
We can do an entire show about bad Stephen King horror movies. God. I think we could do about 5 minutes on good Stephen King horror movies.
No, there's more than 5 minutes. There's quite a few good Stephen King adaptations.
Yeah. Still the best one is Shawshank Redemption, though, for me, which isn't a horror movie. Yeah,
I'm not even that big of a fan of Shawshank.
It's a great movie.
I mean, you've got The Shining, which is Stanley Kubrick.
However, Stephen King didn't like that version of The Shining. You know?
This is why I can't talk to Stephen King anymore. the conversation goes there and it's over.
Yeah.
The Dead Zone. Come on.
Dead Zone's great.
Dead Zone's phenomenal.
Yeah.
And one of the interesting things is...
I don't know if I would consider that much of a horror story, though. It's got horror moments, but it's a thriller more to me.
It's
a political thriller.
It goes through all of those motions. It ends up a political thriller, but it's a horror movie in the middle. And it's David Cronenberg, so again, you have a great director behind it.
Yeah.
The first adaptation of The Stand was fantastic.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, great cast. I can think Cujo is an effective little...
Mm. We rewatched that a couple of years ago. I think you were over when we were rewatching that, right?
You can go back and forth on it.
Yeah, that's an afternoon movie.
Yeah, it's definitely an afternoon movie, but it's still it's a good horror
movie. But again, it comes down to that premise of what if I had a dog that turns on me, and it's a giant dog that's bigger than me and my daughter. You know, what do? You hide in the car, pretty much.
You know who's in Amityville, and I'm sitting there watching the
D.
movie.
Wallace.
And I'm watching him.
Yep.
And I'm like, who is that? Who is that? Who is that? And I can picture him, and I'm like, who is that? Who is that?
Amityville Horror?
Yeah. The mayor from Jaws.
Oh, Murray Hamilton.
Murray Hamilton.
That's right.
Is the senior priest.
Oh, yeah. He's great.
And
yeah.
it's like, he's not
I
in
always
it.
Like him.
He's not in it much, but it's like, he comes on the screen, you're like, who is that?
Yeah.
I know who that is.
And instead of his anchor jacket, he's got like a priest outfit on. Yeah. Yeah, I like Murray Hamilton.
And
he's good.
He's yelling at Rod Steiger, and Rod Steiger's yelling at him. All they do in this movie is yell at each other.
Yeah.
Everybody just yells and screams and runs around and...
I don't know. There's a lot of yelling in life, though. That's why I know. I don't know. I still think people should say it. But I don't know. Derek's giving it a thumbs down.
I would much rather sit down and watch Lucio Fulci's House by the Cemetery. Dario Argento's Suspiria.
Sure. Suspiria's great.
What else could I think? Yeah, there's probably some other haunted.
Well, what about the original one I was mentioning last week, The Haunting? The original one that was in. It's a G movie. We were talking about it last week. Why am I forgetting it? It's just called The Haunting, isn't it?
Yeah, Haunting or The House on Haunted Hill?
No, it wasn't The House on Haunted Hill. It's just The Haunting, I believe.
The Changeling.
Am I losing my mind?
We're talking about The Changeling.
Oh, no,
I'm talking
about The Haunting, which is Robert Wise's movie. It's the one. It's from Shirley Jackson's Haunting of Hill House.
Yep.
But it is adapted from it. But it's called The Haunting. It's just a great, great movie. And there's so many like noises in it and so creepy as hell. That's a great haunted house movie. The Changeling's a great haunted house movie, too.
The other thing is those movies, we've seen Suspiria in the theater.
Yes.
Those movies tend to work a lot better when you're in a dark room.
Yeah.
You know, outside of your living room with the sound system going and the uncertainty of, you know, whatever's happening in the rest of the world.
Yeah, I do have to say, if you are watching a horror movie, you really should have no lights on and you should have a pretty good sound system. You shouldn't be like, you know, cooking or like BSing with a whole bunch of people. Yeah. It's fun to have a party with horror movies. But if you're seeing something for the first time, you know, the really effective ways.
They demand
be
your
in the
attention.
Dark. Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
So why don't we play a little this or that? You want to do that? Let's take a little break, and we'll come back, and we'll play a little this or that. I'll give you a little more of the Amityville soundtrack, and Derek and I will be back in just a moment. You are listening to Real Horror Show here on WMFO in Medford, Massachusetts. My name is Chris Earle, and my co-host here is Derek Gary. We will be back in just a moment.
Someday, a friend may offer you a chance to visit the other side of a dream. Your ticket is a little packet of white powder called heroin. But every packet of heroin is different. You don't know what's getting into you. Some doses are so strong, they kill. Heroin is so vicious that the criminals who make the big money in heroin don't use it. They know a lot of reasons why heroin is very, very dumb. Maybe that's why they call it dumb.
WMFO Medford. You are listening to Real Horror Show with Chris Earle and Derek Airy. Here with you until 7 p.m. The Amityville complete ripoff of Psycho there for a minute, and then it went into like disco and like this weird saxophone territory there.
Yeah, it got kind of derivative at the end.
It was a track called The Axe that they completely ripped off Psycho, and then Jukebox, where I guess, you know, Lalo Schifrin just decided, hey, you know what, I'm going to turn on my jukebox and just put that on soundtrack. But it was nominated for Best Soundtrack. There you go. That's our soundtrack of the week, the Amityville Horror one. We played about 20 minutes of it.
Phantasm soundtrack has some disco influence to it, too.
Yeah, yeah. We'll do Phantasm another week.
That's a great soundtrack.
A great movie and a great soundtrack. I love it. It's good stuff. So I think we should play a little this or that.
All right.
Let's do, let me see if I got this thing going there. Oh, yeah. There we go. Do you remember this? This or that? So this or that is basically two scenarios. And they're horror scenarios. And it's something bad and something worse. You get to pick the bad or the worse. And you tell me whether you survive or maybe you die. Who knows? But you get to make up the ending. It's kind of like a choose-your-own-adventure. So the what I got for you this week, Derek, all right? And they're pretty gruesome. But the first one is you're buried alive. You have 1 hour to live. You are in 6 feet of dirt in a shallow grave.
Oof.
What happens there? Or you are doused with gasoline. You are thrown into a dumpster. And a mob with torches are coming your way, and they are very angry with you. Which one do you choose this week? With this or that?
Oh, man. You know what? I'm taking my chances with the coffin.
You're going to go for the coffin?
I'm going for the coffin.
All right. You are buried alive. I didn't necessarily say you were in a coffin. I said you were buried alive.
Oh, so
6 feet of shallow grave.
See, I've been watching the Lucio Fulci movies.
That's
so,
okay.
You know.
Yeah, yeah, all right. So you're in a coffin. That's fine.
That happens in City of the Living Dead.
Yes, yes.
Where Catriona McCall gets buried in a coffin because
she's
dead. And then it turns out she's not.
Yes.
And she wakes up in the coffin.
Yeah. Also, The Vanishing, a great, great movie. Not necessarily a horror movie, a thriller, but a great, great movie.
My fundamental problem with that scene, by the way, is this is New York City, and we should reasonably assume that she's been through a funeral parlor before she goes into the coffin. Like, who's not doing their job embalming her? Right? Because, you're not supposed to be...
A spike to your arm certainly going to wake you up if you're dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're not dead, rather.
If somebody's knocking on the inside of the coffin at the funeral...
Sure.
You need to go get your money back from the funeral director because they did not do the job correctly.
Yeah.
Okay? No one's surviving that.
So you got a coffin.
So am I in a coffin or not?
You are in a coffin.
I'm 6 feet under. I'm in a coffin.
6 feet under in a coffin. You have 1 hour to live.
Yeah.
You have 1 hour of air. What do you do?
You beat the living hell out of it until, you know, and basically claw your way out of there.
Mm.
I mean, I take my chances against that versus people.
All right. So you're using your fingers, you're clawing.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm carring and digging.
All right.
And of course, it's, you know, once you break through the wood, it's going to collapse down onto
you. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then you, that's the part that is going to kill most people.
Yeah.
So you've got to be...
You get a little dirt in your mouth.
Well, it's not so much the dirt in your mouth as, you know, the oxygen pocket that you had disappearing.
Sure.
Okay. So you've got to figure out how to get up a couple of feet pretty quickly.
Yeah.
If you can do that, there's enough oxygen still in the dirt down there that you're going to be good. So there's... In that situation... There's really only one part of it that's super dangerous for you.
Okay.
And it's that moment where the coffin first caves in.
Yeah. You're 6 feet down, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
That's... At least you know which
way
is up.
You're in trouble. You're definitely in trouble.
At least you know which way is up.
Here's my idea. Why not use your cell phone?
Do I have a cell phone?
I don't know. You could have.
I got no signal. I'm 6 feet down.
You probably. I don't know. Do they work 6 feet down?
I don't think they do.
They don't even work in the corner of my living room.
I know. It's like, so, it doesn't work when I go under the bridge.
Yeah.
So I'm not counting on that to help me. Although, yeah, that's probably a good idea. You know, it's like, yeah, please bury me with my cell phone.
Yeah.
You know.
Or at least a little small, like, Boy Scout shovel or something.
But it's like, my
luck.
Scary. My luck would be they bury me with the cell phone.
Yeah.
And then they forget to pay the bill.
Yeah.
So I'm laying there with the phone, and it's like, you
no
have no service.
Service.
It's like, what?
Yeah. Bill unpaid.
Thank you.
And you actually have one bar, but it was unpaid, so
yeah,
they shut it off right away.
Because
that's what Verizon does.
What?
Yeah. So give me one. Give me one.
All right. I give you a choice.
This or that.
You can be on a boat.
A boat.
Or you can be in the jungle.
All right. And what happens?
Well, so we start with the location.
Okay. So I'll take, give me a jungle. I'll take the jungle this week.
Okay, so you're going to be in the jungle.
Yep.
You're in the middle of the jungle.
Yep.
And you are surrounded by flying insects that want to lay their eggs in your brain.
Oh, God.
They fly into your nose and lay their eggs in your brain.
Oh.
They fly into your ears and they lay their eggs in your brain.
Oh.
They're very small. There are thousands upon thousands of them.
And I'm in the jungle.
And you're in the jungle.
I don't know. I think I'd start. I'm going to take out my Boy Scout shovel and start digging. Bury myself alive.
6 feet down?
Yeah, I'm going to bury myself alive.
That might,
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think that's what I would choose versus like little things going into your brain. What would I do in that scenario? I don't know. I got a good can of off. Maybe do that. Light some citronella candles. Yeah. Maybe, I don't know, how many people do I got? Anybody? I'm by myself?
No, there's people around.
I'm gonna light a whole bunch of fire, because insects don't really like fire. Bugs like to be attracted to light, but I think the fire and the smoke will probably make them go away, or at least keep them away from my schnoz. Worst case scenario, yeah, I'd start digging and I'd bury myself alive.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I think I would use that citronella candle and the smoke. And I just have everybody start lighting everything up. I'd even be taking off shirts and pants and lighting it just to keep all those little things away. And hopefully they go away.
The smoke and the fire is probably the key to surviving in that situation.
I think we have pretty good survival skills, you and I.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we've got a pretty good handle on surviving in horrible situations. But we should talk about Nurse Ratched, who wasn't necessarily a horror actress, but played one in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Definitely one of those everyday horror people that you don't want to come in contact
no.
with. You do not want to be lobotomized just because you're eccentric and smart. But a great, great movie, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, with Jack Nicholson and Louise Lasser, who had passed away this week.
Louise Fletcher.
Louise Lasser was like Mary Hartman, sir.
Exactly. And let me tell you, this was a conversation.
Louise Fletcher.
Because Molly was at the bottom of the stairs, my wife, and I was at the top of the stairs.
Oh, no.
Molly,
you didn't
said,
push her.
And Molly said, no.
Okay.
She was like,
good.
Did you hear Louise Fletcher died? And my response was, Mary Hartman? And she's like,
Mary Hartman. Mary Hartman.
She's like, what's that?
Mary Hartman.
Nurse Ratched.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, Louise. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because I made the same mistake between Louise Lasser and Louise Fletcher.
Sure. Yeah.
1970s. You know, there's only so many Louises running around.
Yeah.
I love, obviously, like one of the great performances of all time. I've always found that character to be misunderstood.
You think she was just a middle-aged woman trying to do the best she could at her job?
She is a strictly...
Just need a little sex?
She's a strictly by-the-book, dead-eyed bureaucrat.
Yeah.
And the evil that she manifests isn't any sort of internal evil. It's not that she's a cruel or wicked person. She's just not somebody who ever sees anything beyond the rules that she's given.
Mm-hmm.
And that automatically puts her on a collision course with everyone around her. There's no compassion. And that's sort of what makes... We think of a nurse and we expect compassion.
Sure.
There's no compassion because the rules that she's been given don't allow compassion.
Yeah.
They're designed to create the illusion of compassion in the people who follow them, and in the people who write them. They're written with good intentions. Oh, let's have people do this, and let's make sure people don't do this, and then everyone will be happy. When everyone turns out to be unhappy, she has no response to it, because
right.
all she knows is to follow the rules.
Exactly. And unfortunately, Here we are almost 50 years later. The movie was made in 1975. Michael Douglas, one of the producers. And it's very relevant to what happens now.
Absolutely.
People follow the rules without actually thinking about them.
Absolutely.
There are so many corporations and places that I've worked and people that I've met like this Nurse Ratched. Very, very horrible person, but victims of their own non-thinking.
She has become something of an anti-hero in recent years, as sort of like the paragon of the uncaring bureaucracy.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's okay to hurt people as long as you're doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Sure.
You know, and if this rule upsets you, the problem is with you and not with the rule.
That's right. Yeah, pretty wild. You've been listening to Real Horror Show with Derek Gary and Chris Earle. We will be back next week. We will do much of the same next week. And we got some new releases next week, Derek. Anything that you is lined up?
It's October, and October is like ground
zero. This is our month.
You know what we're talking about next week? Michael Myers. We got to bring it up.
Sure.
There's a whole slew of new Halloween 4Ks coming out. And it's always, October's always a perfect time to talk about the legacy of Michael Myers.
Beautiful.
Just not the new crap ones.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. We will see you next week. Good night, everyone. From myself and from Derek, it is WMFO in Medford, Massachusetts. Stay tuned.
And you will undoubtedly hear it many more times as the days go by. Now, just in case you're hazy on exactly what it means, let me give you a rough idea. It means that the cost of your clothes and food has gone up to a point where the family budget has become somewhat strained. Well, that's one of those things. And you can't be expected to increase the family income. But there are some things you can do to help. For instance, take better care of your clothes. When you come home from school, change into old clothes before you go out to play. Take care of your health, because doctors and medicines are expensive. Eat well, but don't waste. Take your full share, but eat all you take. Try not to ask mother and dad to buy you things you don't actually need. Make the best and the most of what you've got. Try to be more than usually careful of your school equipment, such as paper, pencils, and so forth. Make them last and go as far as you possibly can. Remember that all members of a family must pull together at a time like this. So do your share.